Coming up on the Locked On Bucks podcast, we revisit the NFL scouting combine and look at six defensive prospects that could fit with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and where the team might be able to select them in the upcoming 2020 NFL draft.
Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bucks Nation, and welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Bucks Podcast. I'm your host, David Harrison, joined again by Evan Winter. Of course, both of us writers over at BucksNation.com covering your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You can find me on Twitter at DH82_Bucks. Find Evan at Evan_Winter. Find Bucks Nation at Bucks_Nation. And of course, find the show at Locked On Bucks. Evan, yesterday was a great conversation that you and I had between each of us picked three offensive prospects to talk about how they did the NFL scouting combine, how it kind of impacts your analysis, your evaluation of who they are as a draft prospect as we enter or we get near spring. And then once free agency gets done, we get a really clear picture as to what the team is going to need moving into the NFL draft at the end of April. Today, we're going to turn the page over to defense. But first and foremost, I would like to talk about a little bit of a Twitter interaction that we had stemming from yesterday's episode, which, of course, came in the form of a lack of Florida Gator love. And Evan, I think that both of us would agree that neither of us are Florida Gator fans, right? However, well, actually, I can't speak for you. I'm not a Florida Gator hater. No, I didn't mean to rhyme, but it worked. Are you a Gator hater?
I can't stand the water lizards.
The water lizards. I didn't know if they had an opposing team nickname. Okay. However, it was specifically in reference to a running back, and I can't remember his name right now to save my life.
LaMichael Perine.
There you go. And listen, we are going to. He's on our list of players that we're going to talk about. But honestly, I picked three. Evan picked three. We just came together. We did it. He didn't make the cut in those six, but it's not because it was a snub by any means. So those of you who have sent in names, we've got a couple of voicemails that came in like a month ago, Evan. So if you're one of the people that sent in those voicemails, I still have it. I've got it earmarked and tabbed. Your guy is coming, I promise you. I got another conversation kind of going on the side with True on Twitter, and he's got a guy that he wants us to look at. That's coming as well. So believe me, guys, even though the NFL draft almost kind of feels like it's right around the corner, we've got plenty of episodes coming to talk about these prospects. We're going to get there. And I've actually got a Florida guy to talk about today to kind of tide you over if you need a Gator fix. But Evan, just like yesterday, I want to kick it off with you. And just like yesterday, you threw a name on the list that has got me really interested because I'm just going to be honest, because of my Ohio State ties. Antoine Winfield, go ahead and give us what you think about the safety.
Man, obviously starting off just easy, why he's needed with the Bucks. The Tampa Bay right now is dangerously thin at safety. Justin Evans, he's going to be a bonus at this point. You can't count on him to come back. And even if he does come back, you have no idea what he's going to be like in terms of performance on the field. So Tampa Bay, not only dangerously thin at safety, they really don't have a true free safety. Mike Edwards, he has a little bit of range to him, but he's more of a kind of guy you play like in a robber type deal. You know, obviously Jordan Whitehead, he's pretty decent in coverage from time to time, but he's a more in the box downhill type guy. And then that's really, I can't think of all the Dakota Dixon's going to be coming back from IR, but he's more of an in the box guy. And then we don't know what's going to happen with Darian Stewart, you know, who's a free agent, Andrew Adams, who's a free agent as well. So either way, Winfield, man, has great range, ran a 4.45, obviously. People are worried about his stature, 5'10", 205. But, hey, Earl Thomas is 5'10", 202, and he's done pretty well in the league, if you ask me. And he can hit. He's a good tackler, and he's not afraid of contact. But obviously, he's going to have to avoid that a lot more in the NFL. I mean, I'm not saying be scared or anything like that, or don't play your style. And actually, sorry, he's 5'9", 203. I apologize. I was reading a different stat. Don't like, you know, completely change your tackling style and all that stuff. But at the same time, just be smart. Don't, you know, don't just make any stupid decisions out there. Excellent ball skills. Like I said, really good range. So there's different ways he can help the Bucks. I mean, he finished with a career high 7 interceptions last year. Tampa Bay's safeties as a unit, all of them on the roster, combined for just 2 interceptions. So, I mean, the dude's a ball hawk. He can climb the ladder against taller receivers. There's a lot of good things about him. You know, the one thing you got to worry about is his injury history, though. And he's only had really one really good year of production, but we see guys just take off all of a sudden later in their career in college, and it bleeds over in the NFL all the time. So where he's trending draft-wise, you've got to like the Draft Network's got him at 56, which is second round, obviously, kind of in the back end. And then Dane Brugler had him at 58 as well. I honestly would not mind Tampa Bay taking him in the second. I would rather them take him in the third, maybe use one of those extra 4s to trade up in the third, get him in the early third, something like that, and then still take somebody else in the second. However, if they did happen to take him at 45, I wouldn't be terribly upset as long as he's used correctly and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Antoine Winfield as well. I definitely think he's probably got second round written on him right now. Kind of have to look and see how things develop in the free agent market and how that impacts everything. But yeah, I mean, I like what you said. The team definitely has a need at safety as far as I'm concerned. I think as far as most people are concerned, even Rondae Barber, you know, we kind of read off a quote that he had with another media source, you know, earlier in the week on the show. And he even mentioned that the team has a need at safety. It doesn't necessarily have to be a day one selection there, because they do have some talent that they can look to mold and hopefully build off from 2019. But with Andrew Adams' future in question and everything, I think it's definitely a spot worth looking at. And Antoine Winfield is definitely, if they're not going to bring in a Buckeye safety, Antoine Winfield Jr. is about as good as they can get outside of that for me personally. So good stuff there. I'm going to start really on day 3, potentially right after the conclusion of day 3. And I'm going to talk about James Smith Williams, defensive lineman out of NC State. Young man is 6'4", 265 pounds, ran a 4.6 40, which was top among defensive linemen, 28 reps, which was top 10, 32-inch vertical, 123-inch broad jump, which was tied for 4th, and he was also top 10 in the 3-cone. This is coming from a guy who is projected to be an undrafted free agent by NFL.com right now, mainly because of injuries. He does have a little bit of injury history. He missed a good solid chunk of 2019 because of injury. And obviously, if you're injured, it's going to put a damper on your production. It's going to put a damper on the tape that you have available. But here's the thing that really kind of caught my eye. So I don't know how many of our Locked On Bucks listeners kind of have their fingers on the pulse of the entire kind of sporting podcast realm, but the Miami Dolphins actually just hired a guy who used to be a Locked On Dolphins host, Travis Wingfield. Really good host, really good football mind, really good dude. So happy for him to be joining the Dolphins staff over there. He's got a new podcast, and Evan, it was just the perfect timing. We're getting ready to talk about this, and he had a guest on his show, Kent Lee Platt. Are you familiar with Raz Scores, Evan?
Oh yeah, for sure. And he writes for Pride of Detroit, so yeah, he does good work. I follow him on
Twitter.
Exactly.
So he had Kent Lee Platt on his show this week. Actually, it's Drive Time podcast with Travis Wingfield, part of the Dolphins Podcast Network. Highly recommend you go listen to Travis. The dude is incredibly intelligent, and now that he's got this platform with the Miami Dolphins, this dude is getting some great guests. Man, he's had Bucky Brooks on recently. I mean, he's just knocking it out of the park over there. James Smith Williams finished with a 9.01 RAS score. And for those of you who don't know what a RAS is, relative athletic score, the top you can get is 10. So it goes 0 to 10, the best is 10, and everything files in below that. So this projected undrafted NFL undrafted free agent in the 2020 NFL draft scored a 9.01. Absolutely amazing performance. It shows he's got all the athletic ability. Size is taken into that too. He meets the size recommendations or, you know, earmarks that you really want to see in defensive lineman. And he's obviously athletic to boot. He does have some injury issues, like we said, but he was obviously healthy enough to compete. He's a young man who wants to learn. He's hungry to perform. This coaching staff has already shown that they can take raw athletic ability and turn it into something good, given the opportunity. He's not a guy, obviously, who's going to come and expected to start. You're talking about putting him behind Will Golston, behind Ndamukong Suh, behind Vita Vea, behind maybe even a couple of free agents that you sign during the offseason, or if you draft a guy even earlier, you're going to put him behind him too. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he sits on the practice squad for a year. But with that kind of raw athletic ability, man, given the opportunity to develop under a solid coaching staff with solid teammates to perform around in a scheme with a coach like Todd Bowles who knows how to scheme his guys' talents to their strengths, it would be a really exciting thing if they picked this guy up in the late rounds just because of the amount of potential that he's shown.
The way you describe him, he kind of reminds me of a slightly bigger version of David Kinney, the guy the Bucks brought in after the tryout last year, and he unfortunately was injured during most of training camp, but he came in on the tryout, and Tampa Bay ended up letting him stick around. That'd be great. He sounded like he'd be a good edge rusher. Maybe he could play in the dirt every now and then, defensive end, you know, depending on certain pass rush situations or something to that extent. But, yeah, I'm always down for extreme athleticism on the outside of the defense and going after the quarterback. So if they could find a way to – if he could find a way to stay healthy, and which I know that's always a given, that's never a given, it's never on the player's fault, but, you know, that's just how the saying goes. If he can find a way to just stay healthy and the coaches can get him to reach that potential, man, sounds like he'd be a great steal.
Oh yeah, most definitely. He'd definitely be one of those guys. Jason Light's kind of known for finding talent later in the draft. Few undrafted successes there. He could definitely be one of those next guys up in that list of names for Jason Light there. So Evan, who do you have next for us?
So I'm gonna go with Javon Kinlaw, and I'll be honest, man, kind of like Isaiah Simmons. When I first, you know, heard about him, I was just kind of eh. But you know, when you look at what he can do and what he does, it could really help out Tampa Bay. And the biggest way he could help out is obviously he would play defensive end in the system. Now, he's still pretty raw. He still has some technique issues. So as a rookie, you know, you've always got to worry about that, especially against some better offensive linemen like he'll be going against in the NFC South outside of Carolina, even though they just picked up Russell Okung. However, I mean, you don't really know if Ndamukong Suh is going to come back or not. Scott Reynolds, a Pewter Report, you know, said that Sue would come back for $7.25 million, which I think that's great. I was thinking maybe around six, but hey, I could live with 7.2 as long as it's not nine like it was last year. However, the 14th pick in the draft last year, Chris Lindstrom, was a $2.6 million cap hit. So that's $5 million, which could go a long way for a Tampa Bay team that's maybe looking at signing one splash free agent, or at least that would at least put more money in there, or hey, could be enough to sign somebody like Tom Brady, you know, something like that. That $5 million could make that much of a difference. The one thing I didn't like about Kinlaw, though, obviously, was he didn't participate at the combine. So that kind of hurt, in my opinion. But at the same time, he's recovering from knee tendonitis. Can understand you don't want to mess that up. And he's gonna perform at his pro day on March 19th. So regardless, though, he's got tremendous size. He's versatile, can play in a 3-4 or 4-3. Obviously, if you're versatile and you're effective, that's great for a Todd Bowles defense. He's powerful with violent hands. So basically, he reminds me a lot of Ndamukong Suh, just the way you describe him. I'm not trying to comp anybody, but just the way I hear descriptions and read about players, that's just who it reminds me of, and that would be an exact fit, except for he's a lot younger, probably has a little bit more pass rush skills. He's got some issues with his pad level, and his balance tends to overexert himself. It reminds me a lot of Vita Vea in his first year. Remember how he would come off that line, but he just footwork wouldn't be right, or he'd bend too much one way or bull rush too much into one way, and he kind of fall down and trip because he would just be overexerting himself. But all of that can be corrected, obviously. I mean, we saw Vea get much better at that in his second year. Obviously he should go in the first round unless his pro day is really bad. When it comes to the trends, CBS has him going ninth to Jacksonville. Trevor of Draft Network has him going ninth. ESPN has him falling 19th to the Las Vegas Raiders, and Dane Brugler has him going 16th to the Atlanta Falcons. So it's pretty much a consensus that he's a first round pick. I would love it if the Bucs got him at 14. Obviously, if there's not one of the big four offensive tackles aren't there, then I think Kinlaw would be the next best pick unless Isaiah Simmons or something like that's there, but I highly doubt he's going to be there. So Javon Kinlaw, I would be very happy with at 14.
Yeah, Kinlaw is a guy who's gotten a lot of love from Bucks media, Bucks fans, national media, tied to the Buccaneers. The concern right now, honestly, is that he's probably going to go ahead of pick 14. And I don't know how you feel about it, Evan, but I'm not a fan of trading up unless you're that one guy.
No, he's not. Yeah, no. Don't trade up for him. He's not that good. I mean, he's good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that or anything, but he's definitely not the player you trade up for. But hey, if he goes before, man, that's fine, because that's another chance that one of the tackles will slide back to us.
Yeah, most definitely. But I mean, hey, if he's there at 14, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what's going to happen. And the Buccaneers are in an interesting situation, because the way this board falls, there could be two or three guys, and you're going to have like your offensive tackle camp on one end screaming for them to take a guy. You're going to have your defensive line guys screaming for a guy. You're going to have your linebacker guy for, you know, your linebacker group screaming to take this guy. And then you have your quarterback group, depending on what happens in free agency, screaming to take this guy. And it's possible the Buccaneers could be sitting there with four or five options of guys that, one, are incredibly talented, and two, actually fill a position of need for the team. So it's kind of one of those situations. And then you got a guy like me who's going to be sitting there saying, yeah, perfect. You got four or five options, trade back four or five spots, and you're still going to get one of them. So everything works out perfectly. So it'll be fun to see what happens there. Kinlaw, man, he's a guy that you really want to see perform. It was too bad that he wasn't able to go the entire week there in Mobile, Alabama, not able to go fully at the scouting combine, but he's got a pro day coming up. So hopefully he can put on a show there. If not, I mean, he's a guy who figures to have a pretty decent career. So NFL fans, football fans in general, are going to get a chance to see him play, even if it's not necessarily in a Buccaneers uniform. So for my next guy, started off with a guy who might be an undrafted free agent, but I'm going to come back up into the day two conversation with Southern Illinois safety Jeremy Chinn. And this is a guy who, honestly, I haven't really given him much of a look until friend of the show and good buddy of mine, JC Cordell, released a post-NFL scouting combine mock draft of his own using his own company's mock draft machine, of course, as the founder and CEO of the Draft Network. And he put Chinn on there and said, okay, where actually came from, because I can tell you that if JC's putting out a mock draft, he's putting that thing out there with information given to him by reading his own staff's excellent work over there, and then of course some of the things that he's being told on the side. And the NFL scouting combine was supposed to be kind of a Kyle Duggar, not so much coming out party, because everybody kind of was already talking about him, buzz was growing, but it's really going to be the time where people talked about him coming into it, go out, and he did a really good job. But it turned into the Kyle and Jeremy show, as Jeremy Chinn turned in a 4.45 40 tie for third among safeties, 41-inch vertical tied him for second, and a 138-inch broad jump, which was the best in his position group. Another guy who, you know, he's not coming from big-time college football, but he's got some talent. He's a free safety. He's going to bring that range. He's going to bring those ball skills. And again, just kind of like how you were talking about the Antoine Winfield, you're talking about the competition at the free safety position, and you're talking about depth. I look at Jeremy Chinn as a third round. Googler had him going late second to, I want to say, the Eagles, but don't quote me on that. And then Trevor had him in his recent post-scouting combine mock draft going in the third. I view him as a third round guy. I don't think we're going to have to reach back into the second, but kind of like what you were talking about before, Evan, if you have kind of what you consider an extra draft pick, you know, if you have a team like, say, the Eagles or someone else that's got a similar need at the position of free safety, and they trade back and net an extra pick. I mean, if you have the 29th pick in the second round, and that's sitting there as the profit you made off of trading back, you get a little bit more bold with those kind of picks, and you can take that reach, because it's a pick you weren't supposed to have in the first place. So in the second round. But if he's sitting there in the third round and they don't go with a guy like Antoine Winfield in the second round, I'd love to see Chinn, just because of that, his athletic ability. And then again, you bring him into camp, you compete with a guy like Mike Edwards, you compete with a guy like Dakota Dixon, who, like you said, is more of an in-the-box kind of guy, was showing some range, I think more range than people expected him to before he got hurt in training camp. But I agree with you, I still think he's got more strong safety written on him than anything else. But you see Chinn come in, and it's a situation where, because feeling the pulse of the Bucs fans, they don't want to see a guy come in that's going to be an automatic starter at free safety. So that's why they don't want to see a day one guy taken, because you almost have to start him at least at the beginning of training camp preseason. They don't want to see a big money free safety signing come in, because then again, you basically are forcing Mike Edwards into a backup role. I think Buccaneers fans want to see competition, yes, but they want to see the best man win. They want to see Mike Edwards get that opportunity. If Andrew Adams comes back, they want to see him get that opportunity. drafting a guy like Chin, small school guy, third round draft pick. You're going to have a three horse race if they bring back Adams. It's going to be amazing to watch in training camp. Every fan on site will have all kinds of fun watching these three guys battle it out in the preseason, through the preseason. And then whoever wins is going to give the Buccaneers a really solid option as a center fielder there at the free safety position.
138-inch broad jump. Dude, that is nuts. That is absolutely crazy. I mean, I can't get over that. I mean, this like the good mark for a cornerback is 120, which is obviously 10 feet. So that means that dude outpaced it by over a foot and a half. That's absolutely insane.
Yeah, dude definitely showed up to Indianapolis ready to make some money. And I think it's fair to say that he definitely made some money.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's absolutely nuts. I like it.
All right, Evan, who's your last guy for the night?
All right, man. So it's got to be Shaq Quarterman, inside linebacker out of Miami. Was a highly, highly recruited kid coming out of high school. When you look at Tampa Bay's roster right now, they need depth at inside linebacker. Right now they have Levante, they have Devin, and they have Jack Kishi, which Kishi's what, two season-ending injuries right in a row. Don't really know. I mean, he looked great in camp, but right now just cannot stay healthy, so I don't really know how much you can rely on him. And Quarterman is that old-school thumper in the middle of the defense. He reminds me a lot of, like, A.J. Johnson with the Broncos or even Kevin Minter, you know, who came and played last year and obviously played with Arians in Arizona or played under Arians in Arizona, like David Long for the Titans. Like, just a guy who's going to crush the gaps on the inside, the A and the B. The C every now and then, you know, depending on who he's at. He's not going to kill you side to sideline, even though he ran a 4.74, which is pretty good for inside linebacker. He just his hips just aren't there. He's just not fluid enough. But like I said, man, he would just be a very, very good first, second down linebacker, you know, maybe run defense, that type of deal. You obviously don't want him on third down. You don't want him in coverage too often. And he could just provide really solid depth for the next few years. I honestly wouldn't mind taking him with that extra fourth round pick. That's a big reach for a lot of people. I understand, especially for a depth player. But, you know, I could definitely see him going in the fifth or sixth. And I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah, his name is one that I think most people who pay attention to college football have been hearing for a good little while. He's definitely caught the attention. It's not the first time I've seen his name attached to the Buccaneers at all. So definitely something that Buccaneers fans should be aware of and someone who could definitely come in and provide some of that depth. Jack Sitchy, it was one of my James. I think I can't remember if we were on a recording at the time that happened, but when they picked up Jack Sitchy from Wisconsin, I was through the roof. I'm not even a Wisconsin guy, but watching Big Ten football, obviously I know who this guy is. The struggles that he went through with his injuries in college, it was great to see the Buccaneers take a chance on a kid who's got all kinds of talent, man. When he's on the field, you've seen it yourself. When he's on the field, you can see why they wanted him to be on this roster. But yeah, man, those health issues and those injuries are just, they're kind of stacking up, and you almost get the feeling he's probably about one or two away before he's pretty much got to call it a career. And that's unfortunate because he's a guy who's got all the motor in the world. He's a leader on the team despite his limited role on the field. And yeah, so, but you know, that's the business, man. And you got to go out there. And if you have guys who can't stay healthy, again, like you said earlier, it's not necessarily their fault, but it is what it is. And Quarterman could definitely be a guy that come in and make some noise there as a depth piece. So well, my final
if,
guy.
Even if Sitchy comes back, they would still probably need an extra guy. You know, I mean, carrying Minter and Sitchy on the regular roster. So even if he comes back, he would still provide, you know, probably some good depth, you know, once he got up to speed with the defense.
Yeah, and you know they love linebackers because those special teams guys are mostly linebackers for the Buccaneers.
Exactly.
So, yeah, definitely more room for them than the Buccaneers need to do to justify picking them. My final guy, and this is where Flores come in. I made you wait all the way to the end. I did it on purpose. Sorry. I don't know. I like to have fun with it. So we talked about our RAS scores, right? And again, shout out to Travis Wingfield over there. James Smith Williams is the guy that he really, you know, full credit to him. But as I was going through RAS scores, and it's funny because I paused the episode. I'm like, what is all this about? Because I honestly did not know about RAS scores. I'm just going to full disclosure. And I read up on it. It's very intriguing stuff. But I look and guess who the top edge guy was, because Smith Williams wasn't the top edge guy in Raz, but the top edge guy in Raz, Jabari Zuniga out of Florida. And then I find that, I get ready for the show. I'm like, you know what? Let me catch the rest of Travis's episode. And sure enough, guess who they're talking about? Jabari Zuniga. So we're 2 for 3 from Travis Wingfield's Drive Time podcast. So definitely, like I said, another plug, go check that out. But listen, Zuniga, 4.64, 40, and second amongst defensive linemen, 29 reps vertical, tied for sixth, 127-inch broad jump, makes him first among his position group. This guy is 6'3", 264 pounds, scored a 9.74 out of 10 on the Rascal. Listen, he's a third-round guy for me. I would like to see the Buccaneers potentially get him in the fourth, but because of where he came from, because of his potential, because of his ceiling, I could see someone making a run for him in the third, especially with those compensatory picks. Evan, you've already kind of talked about the Buccaneers' potential compensatory pick there in the fourth. If they could package that, there's rumors about tight ends being dealt. Again, maybe there's a trade-back scenario in the first round. They can net another third-round pick. Jabari Zuniga is a guy that I could definitely see them rolling dice on. And listen, with Smith Williams, it's pretty much all potential, right? It's all athletic ability. He tests, you know, off the charts, so on and so forth. But he's not a guy you're drafting, expecting to start 2020, have a big role in 2021. But Zuniga, on the other hand, is a guy who could come in as a late day two, early day three draft pick. And you can see this guy develop into a 2021 starter if Ndamukong Suh comes in, signs a 1 or 2 year deal. Maybe that 1 year is only guaranteed. The second year is not. If he starts to fall off a little bit, or if Zuniga just starts coming on late in the season, you can see the Buccaneers thank Ndamukong Suh for his service, allow him to go somewhere else to finish his career, and bring Zuniga up under the starting rotation. Or Will Golston. I don't have any inkling that Will Golston's not coming back for 2020, but he does carry a $5.5 million price tag in 2021, and he turns 30 before the 2021 season. So if his production dips, or if he falls off, or the Bucs just want to use that $5.5 million somewhere else, and they feel like Zuniga is a guy who can step up in his role, then by all means, they elevate him. So he's a guy that you're getting late day two, early day three, that actually legitimately right now you can see the potential NFL starting caliber player in him. Dane Brugler, again, had him in the late third round. Trevor didn't have him on his mock draft at all with three. So if the Buccaneers could grab him in the fourth round in day three, I think that would be a huge steal, especially considering how he tested. And the fact that he only played 1 year of high school football and showed so much raw potential that he ended up in the SEC with the Florida Gators, looking at a day two, potentially day three, as a day two, day three draft pick. Man, the guy's got so much more growth to get out of himself and out of his physical abilities. Again, going back to the teaching ability of the Buccaneers coaching staff, it seems like a perfect fit to me, man.
Yeah, I got to watch him beat up on the Vols quite often. So pretty familiar with the guy. He's got a motor, man, an awesome, awesome motor. And he's really smart. He diagnosed. There's this one handoff. It was a draw or a read option. Sorry, not a draw. It was a read option between Jarrett Garantano and Ty Chandler. I think it was like a second and eight or something. It was 2 years ago, last year, 2018. And man, like it was, I think they called it Texas. I think that was the name of the play for the Vols. But either way, regardless, it was this read option, wide zone out to the left. And dude, I can't remember the left tackle at the time. Tennessee's left tackle was supposed to isolate Zuniga and obviously wall him off for the backside cut. And, dude, Zuniga just absolutely just got up underneath that armpit, basically threw the dude down onto the ground and immediately submarined into the backfield and took down took down Chandler right at the mesh point and just absolutely destroyed the play. So, obviously, he can play the run as well. And, like I said, he's really, really smart. So, you love to be able to see those guys who can, you know, kind of set the edge like that, so to speak. I don't know if that's the proper term or not. But either way, just regardless, read, react, and then make the play. That's always encouraging. And just real quick, for those who might be thinking Kendall Beckwith is also still on the roster, I'm just assuming he's not playing in 2020, when going back to my Shaquille Quarterman stuff. So just wanted to get that out of the way, because I'm sure there's a few people out there thinking that.
Yeah, it'd be great to see him come back, but I'm kind of in the same boat there.
Yeah,
man, but I mean, I'll tell you what. So shout out to Joshua Gardner out there. We gave you some Florida love. It's not the guy you were asking for, but we gave you some Florida love. And man, to hear you give a nice recount of how he affected your Tennessee Volunteers, I'm sure is going to make him happy and smile when he listens to this episode.
Well, he's also got that in 14 out of the last 15 years of victory. So I think Josh is doing okay when it comes to thinking about the balls.
Yeah, I think it'll be all right. All right, Evan. Well, that wraps up our six players from the defensive side of the ball, how they performed at the NFL scouting combine, how they could fit with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and where they might be available in the 2020 NFL draft. And like you said, even threw in a potential undrafted free agent. We do have another voicemail that we're going to address. And funny enough, I wish I would have listened to it prior to yesterday's episode, because it actually fits better with yesterday's episode than today's. But, you know, it is what it is, but we're still going to address it. So here we go.
Hey, James. Hey, David. It's Adam from Cumming, Georgia again. Just calling in. I was listening to the podcast this morning, and I totally agree. I am about done with the whole QB controversy. It's just like, you know, your mom tells you, you've got a birthday party coming up, but she hasn't set a date, and you're just sitting there anxiously waiting so you know that you're going to have a good time. But I'm more concerned about the wide receiver position. I don't believe that we will re-sign Rashad Perriman. I just don't think that it's likely, but it may be. Just been looking for your thoughts on that, and hope you guys have a fabulous day. Thanks, and go Bucks.
All right, so obviously we talked a little bit about wide receivers, but Evan, Rashad Perriman specifically, we've kind of talked about on this show. What are your feelings about Rashad Perriman and the 2020 season as far as whether or not he's going to stay in Tampa? So how do you feel about Rashad in 2020? Do you think he's coming back to Tampa?
If I had to put money on anything, I would say he's not coming back to Tampa for reasons kind of out of his control. The strong wide receiver class in this year's draft is kind of a hindrance for the free agent wide receivers, because you can get one of these guys out of the draft for much, much cheaper, obviously, than you're going to get somebody like Rashad Perriman or Robbie Anderson or Amari Cooper, you know, along those lines. And speaking of Robbie Anderson, I saw, I think it was Joe Caparoso, I believe that's how you say his last name, and I believe that's who it was. He was talking about how the Jets might actually pursue Rashad Perriman in case they can't sign Robbie Anderson, who SpotRack has at $11 million a year. That's what kind of deal he's going to be getting. So I think BP is going to be getting probably around $8 million a year, which is about double what he made last year, but they're going to point to the tape at the end of the year. I mean, he lit the world on fire. So if you had to ask me, I don't think he's back next year.
Yeah, Rashad Perriman definitely earned himself some money for the 2020 season probably beyond. And that's amazing, and it's great. Unfortunately, I don't think the Buccaneers are going to be the team paying him that money. So he's probably definitely moving on. And something I speculated about, I mean, when he was with Cleveland coming into the 2019 season, he was looking forward to the opportunity to go out there and fight and prove himself and earn the number two job next to Jarvis Landry. And when the Buccaneers or when the Browns traded for Odell Beckham, that's when he went to the team and said, "Hey, look, you got your top two. That's not, you know, I'm not here for that. Basically, I'm kind of looking for different opportunities. How about we let me go?" Now he went to Tampa. I don't know. Maybe he thought he could beat out Chris Godwin. Maybe he just didn't know the landscape. Or maybe he just felt like it was an opportunity where, at least in that offense with that quarterback, he knew he was going to get the opportunity to put solid play on film, and he definitely did that. Chris Godwin went out, definitely showed up for the team. So, you know, congratulations to him. Very nice guy. Was on the show last year after he signed, shortly after he signed with the team. Talked to him a little bit at training camp. Very, very cool dude. Wish him all the best, but doesn't look like it's going to happen in a Tampa Bay uniform. And actually, now that wide receivers are coming up again, this RAS score thing, right? So I know I'm new to the party, Evan, but man, I dig it. Chase Claypool, right? Wide receiver that we talked about yesterday from Notre Dame. One of the guys I picked out of the NFL scouting combine, kind of seen him, you know, here and there on the peripheral. I really wanted to bring him into the center of my own vision and the vision of our listeners. Scored a 10.
Nice. That scored is awesome.
A perfect 10. And the only other, if I remember correctly, so don't directly quote me on this, but if I remember correctly, the only other receiver that they have who scored a 10 is, can you take a guess?
Calvin Johnson.
Calvin Johnson. So, now, that's not to say that Chase Claypool is Calvin Johnson reincarnated, guys. But remember, we kind of highlighted some of the size and the athleticism and just kind of how rare it is to see someone who's got that much size to him to have that much athleticism. And I mean, hey, in raw athletic ability with the likes of Calvin Johnson. So again, talking about an offense that likes to play to strengths, talking about a coaching staff kind of known for teaching and known for making, I mean, second half of the season compared to first half of the season, night and day. Scotty Miller. That dude grew before all of our eyes. You know, some of those injuries hampered him, but when he was out there, you saw him grow. If that coaching staff can tap into that type of raw potential with those two guys and get that kind of performance out of him, I mean, you get a wide receiver into Tampa who's got the raw athletic scores that that Calvin Johnson is presenting. There's a lot of potential there. So I'm a little bit more of a fan of Chase Claypool potentially landing with the Buccaneers than I was yesterday after listening to Travis Wingfield's podcast there with the RAS scores. So last plug I'm going to give for Travis Wingfield, guys. Sorry about that. But that's going to do it for this episode and for the week here at the Locked On Bucks podcast. It was great to hear from Bailey on the episode with James again earlier this week. And great, of course, Evan, to have you back on with me this week twice. Right now, James and his son are in South Bend, Indiana, preparing for his son's youth hockey tournament. So, of course, wish him the best of luck doing that. Hopefully, his son gets to win his second title in as many weeks. I will be back on Monday with two guests that you've never heard on this podcast before. So very excited for that. Make sure you come back for that. James and I will be back with you on Tuesday. So if you have questions, reactions to what we've been talking about, or want to share your own thoughts on just about anything, shoot us a voicemail to 813-444-5841. Until next time, have a great weekend. Go Vipers, and thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.